Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Good morning and welcome to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new, ever-all-new HuntRealEstate.com. Everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. HuntRealEstate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA here in Western New York and all across upstate and even out to Phoenix, Arizona. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. Hunt Mortgage is the home of the low rate and closing cost guarantee, and you can reach them today at 633-3700 to speak with one of our skilled mortgage consultants about your particular home financing needs and wants and how we can make those work best for you in today's marketplace. And we are in an incredible time in the market, and that's what we're here to talk about today. But I want you to ask about any of our exclusive programs, including our pre-purchase commitment that allows you at no cost or risk to effectively enter the market to find your next home with cash. And in today's competitive inventory world, for real estate anyway, you need to be as aggressive and competitive as you can possibly be. The ultimate is all cash, obviously, and that may be the situation for some purchasers today, but not that many. You want to be able to compete with those people in case you run up against that, and the pre-purchase commitment allows you to do that, and that's available only through Hunt Mortgage at 633-3700. And if you are saying to yourself, well, we've already been qualified for a loan, and we think we're okay with that, and that seems to be the best we're going to get, don't forget about the Second Look program at Hunt Mortgage, 633-3700. Free of charge, we'll take a look at that and make sure you're getting the lowest rate and closing cost in the market today. And if you're not, and if you are already, we'll give you a gift certificate for $50. If you're not, we'll show you the product that is. And so it's absolutely no lose proposition for you, available only through Hunt Mortgage, 633-3700. Don't forget about the first ever 24/7 365 real estate hotline, the Hunt Hotline, which gives you access to all available information about any property listed for sale in Buffalo, Niagara, Rochester, Syracuse, Albany, Utica, even out to Phoenix, Arizona, and Boston, Massachusetts through our links. But here in Buffalo, the local number is 716-631-4800. Enter the street number of the house you want to know about, no matter who's listing it. So you drive by a sign, and there's 14 phone numbers and a picture and everything else on there, and you'd have to stop and take a picture of it in order to get any kind of recollection of that data. Forget all that. Just dial 631-4800, and you'll be prompted. Once you enter the street number, you'll be prompted with a selection of streets. Select the one you want, and then you'll be given a brief description. And after that, you'll be texted a link to a dedicated website on that particular property. And it's all automatic and just that fast, anytime in any market we serve. Again, the local number is 631-4800. And it doesn't have to be our listing, anybody's listing. That's all I need to know about today's market when you see a sign. We are in a very active real estate market today, and that really is the core of our show today. In the studio with me today is the leader of the number one real estate company in Western New York. That's our Regional Vice President, Peter Scarcella, for Hunt Real Estate Corporation. Good morning.
Morning, Peter. Nice to be here.
It's good to have you here. And before we go any farther, I want to remind our listeners that Hunt is the official relocation and real estate provider for hometown professional teams, the Buffalo Bills, the Buffalo Sabres, and the Rochester Americans. And we've got a big game today. This is like a huge day in Buffalo history for a number of reasons, but most importantly, we want to see the Bills beat the Houston Texans today at 4:30. So watch, cheer them on, bring them home to victory. Remember that when you make your choice for a real estate company, we're the ones that sponsor that team. So anyway, so Peter, we've got a very interesting time in the market. But again, before we get any farther, I want to remind our listeners, we'd like your thoughts. We want to hear what you think is going on in the market. The number one question asked of me, and I'm sure our real estate professionals, I'm certain Peter as well, is how's the market? And almost before you can answer that question, they've got their opinion, which they quickly share with you. And sometimes it's right and sometimes not terribly accurate, but it doesn't matter. They've developed an opinion based on what they know. And so our job today is to help bring some data behind what's going on in the market to let you know exactly what's happening in today's real estate market. But we'd like to hear your stories. If you've got a story about what happened to you in the market in 2019, we'd like to hear it, 803-0930, or just a question about anything relative to real estate. If you're long distance, it's 1-800-616-9236. If you're mobile, it's *930. Those are all free calls. So back to the matter at hand, Peter. Mm-hmm. From your position, if someone were to say to you, how's the market, what would you say?
I would say that, you know, we've been in a market now for maybe the last 4 to 5 years that it's really been inventory challenged. There aren't enough listings. There are plenty of buyers. And unit sales have gone down slightly, but average sale price has gone up.
So that would be kind of a classic definition of economics. When there's a excess amount of demand and a low supply, prices tend to go up.
Exactly.
And inventories tend to decrease even further in that environment. So that being the case, let's get down to the real numbers here. What do you see in the market?
So I look at the numbers in three ways. I look at Erie and Niagara overall, and then I look at Erie County and Niagara County individually just to kind of see what's going on. And then I look at individual markets, and I've got some data here on two specific Buffalo markets, and that's East Aurora and Seneca Street in South Buffalo, just to show where the residential properties are going. But overall, in Erie and Niagara, volume is up 4%, and unit sales are down roughly 2%.
Let me stop you right there, mm-hmm. just so our listeners understand. Volume is the sum total of the sale price of all the properties sold in the counties. Correct?
Correct.
Okay. And units are just the number of houses. Correct.
Right.
And so there's a 2% decline in units, but a 4% increase in volume, which means average sale price has gone up. How much?
The average sale price has gone from 182 to 193, so it's up roughly $11,000. And this is on single family mm-hmm. sales. I'm not looking at condos or multi-dwellings or commercial, just strictly single family sales.
You don't include condos in that?
No, I did not.
Why not?
Well, I'm just looking. I wanted to look at single-family residential
okay,
overall.
Okay. All right. So what else?
Well, then, you know, it's interesting. The median price in Buffalo, and that's half the units sell above a certain price and half below. The median price in Buffalo is $157,500. In New York State, it's $280,000. So it kind of gives you a brief snapshot. Yeah, we talk about the real estate market in Buffalo, New York, and we've got some of the best real estate in the country here.
For the best price.
For the best price.
But let's face a fact here. In that New York State number is this place called New York City.
Right.
Which
yeah.
kind of goofs the whole thing up.
Excuse
because
it.
The average sale price average in Manhattan is $1.9 million. Mm-hmm. So that you throw the number of units that might transfer in Manhattan. And by the way, that's a very, very, very sluggish market right now.
Mm-hmm. High end is. It's soft.
So go ahead.
So closings in November were down 11% year over year. They're down 2%. We just talked about, and then listings year over year are pretty flat.
New listings coming on the market,
and that's been a trend now, as you know, for 4 or 5 years, and I think that's going to continue into the new year as well.
Yet we're seeing a real that's kind of a distorted number because we can only measure listings when they happen, and we can't do that every 5 minutes as listings come on the market. We do that at the beginning of the month and the end of the month. But what can happen in the middle of the month to keep the unit sale number up is that a house comes on the market on the 10th of the month and sells on the 15th.
Right. Yeah. And then we look at the turnover. Mm-hmm. The turnover rate it's dropped from 3 months to 2.7, and that 2.7 months. And what that means is if the industry didn't take another listing, we'd sell out the inventory in 2.7 months. An even market is 6 months. So we've been into this fast turnover rate for quite some time now.
What does that mean for the people that we dealt with in the last year and even going forward? What do you think the implication of that is?
You know, I look at, you know, we've got different market segments. You've got first-time home buyers. And I had a discussion with one of our people in our Hamburg branch yesterday and his brother. His brother's renting and he wants to, you know, he's thinking of maybe buying a house and or he's going to continue to rent. And he said, well, he wants to save up some more money. Well, you know, with interest rates where they are, interest rates are below 4%, phenomenal numbers. And, you know, property values, if they continue to increase and you save a couple of grand, what are you gaining? You know, you want a couple more grand for a down payment? You're going to save $10 a month, but the price of the house just went up $10,000. So we get into a thing where first-time home buyers, they're out there trying to compete and buy properties in a spring market where they're competing against cash or conventional financing and they may need seller concessions and they're disadvantaged in their financing and it's tough to compete. What they should be doing is buying right now, right this minute, because competition, there's fewer people competing for properties. There's motivated sellers out there, and now's the time for a first-time home buyer to buy, because when you get into the spring market, it's going to be difficult. And if you don't, we've seen this time and again, people, you know, they make offers on houses, and you know, some people, it's like six or seven deals they made offers on, and they didn't get the house, and then there's a frustration factor that sets in, and then they, you know, they go to the sidelines and sign a new lease, and they're renting. Mm-hmm. And so that's one segment. And then we've got a logjam with the move-up buyer. I got a house to sell. I don't have anywhere to go. What do I do? And, you know, if I can't buy contingent, because I can't in the spring market, mm-hmm. I can't compete with cash buyers. I can't compete with conventional financing, because I've got a house to sell. But right now you can make a deal. You got a house to sell, you can buy something, put your house on the market, and you stand a better chance of making a deal now than you would the spring market.
A lot of people will say in that environment, though, if I go contingent on the sale of my home, I risk losing the house I really want.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens then?
Well, I guess my philosophy on that is, you know what? If you're going to move, put the house on the market, sell it. If you have to go into short-term rental, go into a short-term rental. Or if the buyer's willing to let you stay in the property, you do a rental after closing, something to that effect. But, you know, if you've got a house to sell, it's just going to be difficult to compete.
Well, maybe, or maybe not. I mean, there's programs that I'm sure our listeners might have heard on television where they can maybe buy before they sell, and then somebody else will take their home effectively and trade, including a program we offer.
Seller Security Plan.
So why wouldn't anybody just pursue that?
Well, I think that program, it's a little cumbersome, because there's a time frame that comes into play.
Mm-hmm. But the protection period is lengthy, that's correct.
Mm-hmm.
6 months, up to 6 months. But the fact of the matter is, in today's market, based on the numbers that you just said, the risk is not terribly high. But there is risk. There's always risk,
right,
in any business transaction, but which a house buying is. You've mentioned a couple different market segments demographically.
Mm-hmm.
The first-time buyer, the move-up buyer. One you didn't mention is effectively the move-down buyer, the empty nester, that kind
right.
of thing, that have lived in the home for 25 years or raised their family there, what I call the blood, sweat, and tears speech. They've got all their life tied up in this house. There's stuff in the attic they haven't looked at in 22 of those 25 years, and yet they're loath to get rid of it. And even the thought of digging through all that is like torture, and they just don't want to do it. So they just stay put. What about, and you know, I've interviewed Nick Sinatra and Rocco Termini, that among others that are heavily into the apartment world here in Western New York. And really, those two guys and others have transitioned that whole apartment world, Jake Schneider, such that, you know, there's great better options today than there ever have been in terms of high quality, either renovated or brand new space. And so it's, you mentioned going into short-term rental. That's an undesirable option for a lot of people.
Yeah, and we've talked about people right-sizing their living situation mm-hmm. Time and again. And you know, for empty nesters, they can downsize and build a patio home. But the cost to build patio homes now, I mean, you're into $300,000 to $500,000 to build a patio home.
Mm-hmm.
You come out of your existing house, and what I'm seeing is that people are just rehabbing the home they're living in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you never know when a kid's going to come back. Your kids are coming back from school, from college. A lot of them are moving back home. You got marital things where you might have a kid moving in. So, people look at it differently now. And then the other segment that's that we have to keep an eye on is people going into assisted living, and I hear that there's a backlog, there's a waiting list, and you know how it goes. I want to go into assisted living, I've got a house to sell, I don't want to put it on the market, I'm on the waiting list, and then you get the call, okay, your unit's available, and it's sure, now I got to put my house on the market. So.
Well, the reality of the situation is that in some cases there's a waiting list, and many other cases there isn't.
Right.
Otherwise, we wouldn't be seeing the ads that we're seeing on television all the time for the various senior housing development projects. But the fact of the matter is that it is a viable option, and it's becoming a more what I would describe as socially acceptable option. It used to be that a nursing home was last resort.
Yeah.
And I think that those developers have done an excellent job of changing the whole image of that kind of housing from the nursing home thing, which is needed in many cases too, intermediate housing, even independent living, but it's all within a campus that's secure and also supportive of people that are going through, you know, just the whole aspects of life where you just might need a hand once in a while, or you just don't want to worry about something. You don't want to worry about cooking a meal, so there's a place to get one, that kind of thing, but right on the campus. But, you know, you mentioned a couple of things here, and I guess I'm going to challenge a little bit. I still think that, you know, you've accurately observed that people will just throw up their hand and say, let's just fix up the house we have, and, you know, we've been here, we know it, it's blah, 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 we like our neighborhood. But the problem I see with that in the whole dynamic of the real estate market is it's a property that still, no matter how much they fix it up or adapt it, is ill-suited for two people when it was designed, or one person when it was designed for six. And because it was designed for six, that family of six is now kind of stranded out there waiting for this kind of house to come on the market. So a neighborhood, pick any street with 20 of these houses on it that were designed for five, six people, now have, instead of, say, five times 20 or 100 people living on that street, you've got 20 times two or three, so you've got 50 or 60 versus 100. It affects the school systems, it affects the tax base, it affects everything about that community. So isn't it a socially responsible thing, and granted I'm getting way out there, but isn't it a socially responsible thing for people to say to themselves, you know what, this isn't right for us, but it is right for somebody. And maybe we should just take a hard look at that.
Yeah, you know, I'm one of the first. You know, homeownership isn't for everybody. There's a responsibility that comes with that.
Well, that's a different question. Let's go back.
But the issue is whether they're going to maintain their home or not is the point that I'm getting at.
Well, even if they say, I can take care of it, it looks fine. Lawn's cut, looks beautiful. But I can argue that, and I'll say I get defensive about it, let's say. But the fact of the matter is, it's still not the right house for me.
Right.
So it's forgetting the maintenance issue for a second. What would you say to somebody who really should be in a different house? Do you say, yeah, go ahead and get an estimate to get it fixed up. Go ahead and fix it up. Or maybe you should explore the market. Maybe you should see what's out there. Maybe the best thing for you and your family is not to have the safe harbor there just in case a kid wants to come home that might come home for 2 weeks and leave again. You know, get him a hotel room. It's cheaper. But go ahead.
No, but I guess the cost of maintaining a home is there. But to go, maybe you go into apartment living where you cut that expense. It's easier. You put the key in the door. You open it. You walk away. You don't have all the issues. It gives you more free time.
Right. Maybe you might want to travel, for example, or even take the equity of your home here and buy. Maybe just store it away or buy something in another market that where you might want to be, kind of a retirement home or whatever the case might be. It might not be in South Buffalo. But let's go back to South Buffalo and East Aurora. You started on that, and I diverted you. What's going on there?
So I'll do East Aurora first. That's really a jewel for Western New York, what's going on there. And it's really been, you know, business drives everything. You have business society and government, but business is a driving force in anything. You need people involved. But East Aurora, I'll just give you the property values first. The average, and these are just single family, and this is on a rolling 12, this would be year end through December. Now, the average sale price went from 277 to 313. It's up $36,000, 13% in 1 year. But the key thing there is that they redid their the main drag there, the main street. They put money into the infrastructure. And now you've got restaurants and shops opening in the school district. It's one of the top school districts in Western New York. And I mean, it's a wonderful community.
Well, let's deal with that. I mean, that goes to my point earlier. That's happened because there's been turnover. New families have come into that marketplace, young families. And so the investment in infrastructure on the part of the governmental entities becomes justified. But when you're serving fewer people with the same number of housing units, how can you, as a government, continue to justify the the investment, or how can you not make the investment if the street needs fixing? Yet you've got basically people that will fall into a certain category where they'll pay less taxes, actually. And so I think the community as a whole is not well served by that.
Well, and there you've got the relationship between the business sector and property values. And he was the ex-mayor of Milwaukee, and he was up in Buffalo 6 or 7 years ago to talk about the redevelopment of Main Street. And we talked about that, and he said, you know, here's the deal. He said, and this is, applies to Main Streets. The narrower the street, the higher the property values. Because what you're doing, like East Aurora, it's a narrow thing. It's a two-lane deal. And in the theory is people, they get out of their cars and they shop in the neighborhood, and they're supporting supporting their local merchants who have, you know, they got kids going to school, they're paying property taxes. You shop in the neighborhood, you know, and I get it, the holidays and all that. People want, you know, they want ease of things, and they want to shop on Amazon and all that. But, I mean, what does that do for us? What does it do for the community? You know, support your local merchants. They work hard. The restaurants, merchants. I mean, all these things get tied together to create a vibrant environment.
This is an age-old discussion, and the inventory issue has made it even more, I guess, pronounced, and that is the walkable community versus suburban sprawl. We've done dozens of shows on smart development, new urbanism, walkable communities, just like you said, narrowing of streets. George Grasser, who's been a leading proponent of this, has been on several times. We've talked about it many times. We do have to go to a break. Mm-hmm. We'll be right back with more from Our House to Yours after these very important questions. Happy New Year, by the way. Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and I ended the last segment with a Happy New Year, and I'll begin this one with a Happy New Year to everybody out there. Hopefully this will be the best of your life. We hope it'll be right here in Western New York, and you'll be doing what you can to contribute to the betterment of our community, which is really part of our mission here on this show, which is to help you protect and enhance your investment in real estate right here, which is our job. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by huntrealestate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. Huntrealestate.com is the only place on the web where you can find a complete inventory of homes available not just here in Western New York, but also all across upstate, and even through our links to Phoenix, Arizona, and Boston, Massachusetts. And you'll also find access to a complete set of homeownership services at huntrealestate.com, which is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. For more information about our many exclusive programs, including the one that allows you to roll the cost of home improvements into your mortgage. And in today's world here in Western New York, that's a very, very valuable service, allowing you to effectively buy the before but live the after. Call 633-3700. And what you'll do by calling them on this particular program is you're going to know what you're in for. And let's face a fact, when you're looking at a beautiful home with great woodwork and it's been around for 120 years or so, you don't know what's behind those walls, and you'll want to know. And through this program, you can get at least an idea, and you can roll the cost of the improvements that you know you're going to make or want to make right into that mortgage. Also ask about our pre-purchase commitment and even our warm home loan. And don't forget about that second look program available only through Hunt Mortgage at 633-3700. A general question about real estate can be answered by our customer service people at 716-633-9400. One of our customer service reps will either answer your call right there or direct you to the appropriate professional for whatever it is you may need, which is relative to buying or selling a home, financing a home, insuring a home, or even fixing up the one you have. And remember, our guarantee stands. We referenced this earlier. We will sell your home, or ERA will buy it. If you've got any concerns about that, that's called the Seller's Security Plan, available only through Hunt Real Estate ERA professionals. Stop into one of our many open houses this week and ask about them. I'm in the studio today with Peter Scarsella. Mr. Scarsella is the Regional Vice President for Hunt Real Estate ERA. And we've been talking about the market here in our first show of the year, looking back on 2019. And just to remind our listeners what Mr. Scarsella said earlier, the volume has been up by about 4% in terms of total transactions in Erie and Niagara County. The units are down about 2%, which would indicate obviously a higher sale price. Just prior to the break, Mr. Scarsella was talking about the average sale price in a village, the Village of East Aurora, for mm-hmm. example, and how much it's gone up. What about other markets? You mentioned South Buffalo earlier in the show.
Well, Seneca, and I'm an old South Buffalonian, excuse me, and, you know, on Seneca Street, it was the corner of Seneca and Kaz, there's a building there that sat vacant for many years, and the guy just wouldn't sell it. And Mark Schroeder at the time was running, he started a started the South Buffalo Chamber of Commerce, and I was a member of that. And we'd start every meeting by, you know, counting the, he'd count the number of vacant storefronts and the impact that that had on that community and on property values. And then Jake Schneider got a hold of this property a couple of years ago, and he's just done a remarkable job with it. You know, he's got, I think, four or five businesses in there in addition to his space, which is for banquets and weddings and things like that. And it really kind of spearheaded that whole development on Seneca Street. And then there's another group there, Hook and Ladder Development, started buying up properties and rehabbing them. You know, the rehab thing kind of bugs me. It's like flipping, you know, flipping houses. It's, you know, people think they're going to flip, and they buy a piece of property and they throw a coat of paint on it, and they think they've flipped it. And there's, you know, there's that side of the business. But these are developers that are putting blood, sweat, and tears into these properties, and they're rehabbing them, and they look great. And it go, but it just goes to the whole community. And then, you know, the different businesses that enter the marketplace. Like I said, he's got five new businesses that opened up in that building alone at the corner of Seneca and Kaz.
If you look at the data on real estate, what you'll find is that there's two things that impact the values more than anything else: people and jobs. And that's why we explore the things we do on this show, which is to look at the impact of people coming in or out of our community and the attractiveness of our community from a job standpoint. So Mark Schroeder or anybody could say, well, we've got these vacancies, let's do something about it. But without people wanting to be there and without businesses wanting to be there and hire people to work there who, just because it's simpler and better and easier to live near where you work, nothing would happen. So if you look at the bigger picture here in Western New York and you look at our population, the data that you provided earlier is perfectly consistent with that. We don't have growth of it to any extent of mm-hmm. population here. If we did, the numbers, for example, the average sale price would look even more dramatically different and better than we see it today. Go to certain parts of this country where there is even more dramatic increase in prices, and what you'll find is two things. People are moving there, number one, and number two, businesses are moving there, mm-hmm. and usually one implies the other. Yet we struggle with that here, and we've interviewed our politicians and our decision makers in this community to see what they're doing about that, and there's reason for us to be optimistic, but we have a long way to go. One of the things that I've asked every one of those people is, there's a feeling of momentum here. We've got a big football game today. People are psyched about lots of things here, which is entirely spectacular and positive. Yet there's always, I think, in some people's minds, thinking people, how do we keep this going? From a real estate perspective, what do you see? How do we keep this going? And let me give you the categories. Number one, how do we get more new houses built here? Because that's one of the great signs of strength of a real estate market. Are there available new houses, and are they selling? Secondly, how do we encourage turnover that really, more than anything else, is prompted by people movement, more than it is just pure demographics? In other words, people aging out, all the groups that you mentioned earlier, people moving into our community. So what are your thoughts on just those two aspects of this?
Well, on new home construction, I mean, it's really been a banner year again for the builders, and we've got a relationship with Murano Homes, and they had their best year ever. I think they were close to 200 units. I think their projection was somewhere around 180, and we're their top broker as far as business goes. So we aren't building enough homes. You know, there's you know, because of the inventory challenge, people, they should look at new construction. You know, you're going to have to pay more, but you get the house you want if you can't find what you want in an existing home. So I don't think they're building enough homes.
Let's look at the dynamics that lead to more homes being built. First of all, just the destruction of inventory. Inventory just ages out. You can drive through parts of our community and see lots of vacant land, vacant lots, the sporadic vacant lots. You can see, and you speak about how South Buffalo, that's certainly the case in certain neighborhoods in South Buffalo, among others. That's so you have to have availability of land. And if the land is available where the infrastructure is already there, the streets and the sewers and the water lines and the power is all already there, it makes development that much easier. Yet we still have gaps all around this community. That's number one. Number two,
And to that point, I mean, I've talked to builders about building on spec in the village of Williamsville, for example, or the city of Buffalo.
What do they say to you?
I guess it's the cost of moving materials to a site and labor and taking them off a subdivision.
Well, the one-off is the most expensive way you can build. Let's face that.
But I believe there's a market for that.
Well, there definitely is, but will someone pay the necessary premium?
I believe they will.
Well, I guess that remains to be seen. Somebody has to actually put their money on the table and make
exactly.
So, number one, you've got destruction of available land. Destruction of property creates available infrastructure that can be built on. Secondly, population increase. That always supports new home construction. So you go to parts of this country where populations are growing, no matter what the segment or how you define it, you're going to have more new construction. And thirdly, and this is the most important thing, and going to your point earlier, if prices are going up significantly in the existing home marketplace, it justifies building new because the cost of new is going to be higher. Mm-hmm. It's definitively going to be higher, no question about it. So that being the case, do we have those three elements? We know we've got number one. We know we've got the available land in the, let's say, the village of Williamsville or wherever it might be. There's a lot here or a lot there. There's other parts of town where there's many more lots where existing infrastructure is there, able to be built on, where it's not happening. Or if it's going to happen, it has to be through subsidies, let's say. Population. Do we have the component there?
Well, I haven't seen the latest census numbers, but I believe we bottomed out, and I thought that we were going up 1 or 2% on population growth. That's in Erie County.
Okay, that's more generally, and I think that's true. The county executive has sat there and said that I think it was last year, the year before, was the first year in a long time that we saw a population increase. It wasn't terribly significant, but we saw a population increase, which is a good thing. But it has to be proportionate. In other words, it's got to be not just population growing, but what that population is composed of. Are there new jobs associated with that population growth? And we've got, for example, the M&T technology segment that's obviously growing. Delaware North, the CEO sat in that chair and described how they're hiring. So you've got two of the biggest, most powerful financial entities in our community that are driving new jobs. That brings new people into our community, but two companies really are not enough.
But hopefully it will also keep people here. You know, our kids that are educated we're a college and university town now, and we want to keep them here.
That's true, and we had Matt Enstis from the medical complex to talk about what's happening there. 150 new companies are in their embryonic stage right there on that campus, which is incredible. So and you mentioned about prices. Is a 4% increase in prices, or whatever the actual percentage was, is that enough to encourage builders to build more homes? And you mentioned the word spec earlier. They've got to take a chance. Is it justified today?
I believe it is due to the inventory challenge. Yeah.
If it is, why aren't we building more houses? New houses.
I think labor is an issue right now.
So cost. So yeah. We're growing circular in this, and we're going to come back and we'll talk more about this after these very important messages from our house to yours. Welcome back to our house. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new huntrealestate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. And the show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, home of the low rate and closing cost guarantee, the pre-purchase commitment, and the second look program, 633-3700. Call them today. You really need to do that because if you watch religiously that's probably a bad way to describe it, but the financial news. And invariably in the discussion somewhere they come back to housing. And the conditions around housing today, where a year ago we were really kind of the laggard in the financial world, the segment of the market, the financial world that was least positively impacting our world. Now we've come back. The housing piece of the economy is very strong right now from any number of perspectives. And our question today for the Region Vice President of Hunt Real Estate ERA, Peter Scarsello, is that true here? And if it's true here, what are the components that are making that true? And we've discussed, for example, the availability of existing housing, which is low. We've discussed the availability of new housing, which is increasing, but is it sufficient to meet demand? And I'm going to ask Mr. Scarsello about that in a second. We've talked about prices and the value of real estate justify investment fundamentally. There's bottom fishers that you talked about, Peter, earlier, the flippers, and there's even a subclass of them, and I mean sub-lower class.
Yeah, there is, unfortunately.
Which are the the fire engine chasers and the ambulance chasers that try to get to people or if their families or somebody before the market gets to them, and they try to buy at sub-market prices, and they don't even paint them. They just put a sign in front and try to sell it. And in many cases, the seller of the home, the original owner in that scenario, has received an insurance check. And so they say, I'm out of here. Now, to me, this is not helping the economy a single bit.
No, it doesn't.
Except that one guy or woman that is able to get a hold of that house and do nothing to it, put a sign in front and sell it. So that's the sub-flipper, sub-marketplace, which is out there. But that's a handful of units, mm-hmm. really, relative to the rest of the market. So we don't want to worry too much about them.
But you talked about housing and the impact it has on the economy. Mm-hmm. And I think at one time we looked at it and the number of people that were involved in just a simple real estate transaction. I can't remember the number, but it was up there, and it's attorneys, it's realtors, it's people rehabbing homes, mm-hmm. insurance,
there's,
home inspectors. I mean, you go on and on.
As many as 17 vendors or service providers in any single real estate transaction. So it's a huge part of the economy. There's no question about it. And how housing goes in many cases is bellwether for the entire rest of the economy, which is why we're focused on it. Right here, right now in Western New York, which is what I really need your thoughts on. So let's look forward into 2020. What do you see as the key dynamics that will affect the market in 2020 here in Western New
York? Well, politically, we've got an election coming in November, so I don't think anything's going to really happen in the short run. The interest rates, I believe, are going to remain low. It's still going to be the inventory challenge. But beyond that, I don't know. We've talked about that. What's going to happen after the election in 2020? That remains to be seen. But I think in the short run, our position in Buffalo is pretty solid. We moved into the number one position in Buffalo in both Erie and Niagara counties. Our people worked really, really hard this year delivering our products and services. We're a home ownership services organization.
Well, I want to go back and layer on that a second, but we do have a caller on the line. This is Gustav from Waynesville. Gustav, how can we help you?
Thank you. I'm wondering first whether, in your experience with your customers, whether they specifically ask for walkable communities or not, or whether this is kind of a top-down phenomenon. And secondly, whether you think the new urbanist program is also simultaneously frustrating businesses. I'm thinking of the so-called green code in Buffalo and its labyrinth of new zoning categories, and if you have an opinion about whether that's good or bad for development. Thank you.
Well, it's interesting. I'm going to take a little swing at that, yeah. And I want you to as well. First of all, do people ask about walkable communities? Probably don't use that term. What they say, they say, I like the village location. I want to be able to, maybe walk my kids to school. I want to be able to walk to a coffee shop. They don't say, I want to live in a walkable community. So,
no, but what they want, I want to live where I grew up. I want to live where my parents raised me. It's that type thing, more or less.
Right, provided that was a walkable community.
Right.
It's out way out in, you know, a suburban cul-de-sac someplace. They might not say, you know, I don't want to live like that. So that's I think that's a classification. If it's the right classification, they'll say they want to live where their parents did. And that's true everywhere. So whether or not people ask about a walkable community, you would say do they use that term?
No.
They don't use that term. So Gustav is right. That may be a top-down kind of phenomenon term, a description of after the fact, but people aren't saying, I want to be in a walkable community. They're saying, I want to be able to do X. I want the services right there retail-wise. And the second part of his question is perhaps a little bit more perplexing, and that would be to the extent that that new regulation hinders the business development in any community. For example, let's go back to South Buffalo. The Green Code definitely impacts what's going on in South Buffalo. So developers must factor that into their cost structure, which has to impact the rent. So what happens in many cases is that the government also has to step in and provide tax credits and other gimmicks, so to speak, to get people to make that investment. Would you say that's true? But the average businessman who's already there doesn't get those benefits.
Yes, I would say that's true. And then, as you know, I mean, the rental rates have really escalated. And, young kids will go downtown and pay $2,500 a month for the ease of, you know, they want to live downtown. And they don't want to take on home ownership.
And I think that's true if you look at the vacancy rates. But, you know, if you drill down in that a little bit, when those units first came on the market, they're snapped up. Well, now we're in year five, year six, year seven, and they need to be repainted and stuff, and all of a sudden there's a little more vacancy here and there.
Or condoed
in some cases, and certainly Jake Schneider shows that. We have a text that came in, and it says as follows. Great show, gentlemen. How do you get your town to enforce the simple things? West Seneca has become a hodgepodge. Pig pen. The business owners do not maintain their properties. Use the name of a specific restaurant has been two different colors and half done for 3 years, vacant gas stations 5 years, and then a very nice take care. So how would you describe something like that? Or how would you respond?
Address it?
I'd
address it quite frankly. I said, get your, you know, in the city of Buffalo, you get your councilman involved. Mayor Brown stepped in, and I believe he's going to get tougher on people that aren't maintaining their commercial properties. The restrictions, he's going to start to turn the screws on that.
Well, that's the city, specifically.
Even the town of West Seneca, go down to the town hall, walk in, and vent your frustrations.
Okay, well, let's say I would assume this gentleman, being somewhat knowledgeable, or woman, I can't tell, would may have already done something like that, but the problem persists. What do you do then? Do you talk to your councilman?
I believe that's the remedy. At least get things started.
All right.
Well, and I know the property that they're referring to here.
Okay. Good. Well, you know, let's face a fact. There's politics involved in a lot of this. So, there you go. Right there. Thank you very much. I'm just trying to get my text here so I can see it right. Thank you very much. Anyway, so the fact of the matter is, though, it requires action. Somebody has to do something. And I think what's implied in this text is that government's not acting. So the average citizen can actually make a difference, in your opinion?
I believe so, yeah.
All right, could we have another text here? It says, you've got to be kidding me, saying that if you can't find what you want, you build. Are you out of touch with how much it costs to build? The cost of land plus the cost of what you want material-wise? For most middle-class families, this is out of touch. And this is from someone named Pete. Good name.
Too many.
A good name. There's three of us now in this conversation. But what he says is true. I mean, he says the average guy goes out and he looks at a house. Let's go to the village of East Aurora, for example, and he sees that it's maybe, I'm going to pick a number out of the hat, 150 or 175 a square foot to buy the existing home. Granted, it's got to be fixed up and all that stuff, but it's still $150, $175. Let's look at new construction. What's new construction today on a per square foot basis?
$250.
That's $100 a foot difference.
Right.
So he's right. It's
a couple hundred thousand.
And this is what we were talking about earlier. If there is price appreciation in existing housing to the point where the variance between existing homes and new homes is, pick a number, 25% or perhaps less than that, people will choose, to Pete's comment, they will choose a new home because they'll get everything they want. There's two problems with that. Number one, it will still cost more. Number two, it may not be in the location that they want, which is why existing homes are in many cases preferable. We've got two callers. We're going to take these calls quick. This is Jen from South Buffalo. Jen, how can we help you?
Hi there. This is a question for Mr. Scarcello. I also am an ex-South Buffalo man, and I have a question. Why do you think Abbott Road is not developed in South Buffalo? I mean, it has the walkability factor with, it could be a great town or great street for different shops, and there's tons of families in South Buffalo, which I think South Buffalo is a secret gem in our city. And the second part of that question is for the average investor, if you wanted to invest in different parts of South Buffalo, where do you go to get incentives that maybe the larger developers are getting? Like, where do you find that information?
Good question.
Well, first of all, you know, it's interesting you raise this question. I did this maybe 3 weeks ago. I took a ride down Abbott Road because this isn't the first time I've heard your question. And it's what's going on Abbott. And I grew up on Abbott Road, so I'm very familiar with that marketplace. But if you look at the difference between Abbott Road and Seneca Street has a lot more concentration of businesses and business buildings, where on Abbott Road, it's more spread out. You've got more residential-type properties on Abbott Road. So, you know, you've got a Wilson Farms. You might have a 7-Eleven. There's a couple of pizza places. But you don't have that concentration of business on Abbott Road like you do on Seneca Street. So I think that's
those are all drive-to kind of businesses.
Yes.
Whereas on Seneca Street, you're creating walk-to kind of businesses, like you have in East Aurora, or Village of Hamburg, for example. Major transition there.
Right. And then on the residential, I mean, where do you invest in South Buffalo? I mean, you know, if you look at you look at Riverside or Blackrock, where
Look at the east side. Look at Bailey Avenue. I mean, in my mind, these are prime high concentrations of humanity that are not well served by that kind of intersection of retail and residential.
Yeah, and you know, Abbott McKinley, the most expensive part of South Buffalo, you know, from an investment standpoint, I mean, you're not going to get a return there like you would maybe Seneca Street, and even that's going up in value. But South Park between South Park and Hopkins, that area is going up. So there's opportunity there. I'm astounded by some of the prices they get in that marketplace.
All of a sudden, we've hit a nerve here. Peter, where can past episodes of your program be found? HuntRealEstate.com. Go to our blog. They're there. Also go to our YouTube. I'm sorry, our own podcast, which is Our House. You can go there, Our-House, and you can find all the shows there. Here's a question. It has been viable to build a sub-200,000 category for longer than a generation region-wide. There's your supply shortage in viable neighborhoods. Number two, demographics region-wide, remarkably old. Population decline is to be expected in 10-year window. Jeff from Lewiston. I don't know if we can build anything in the sub-200,000 category. I don't know if that's possible unless it's a condominium that might be 600 or 700 square feet, and I don't even think that's possible today. But maybe you know something we don't, and I'd like to know it if Jeff could share that with me. Shortage of supply in viable neighborhoods, absolutely. Demographics region-wide are remarkably old. That's true. Not terrible, though. It's I think getting better as time goes on. As young people, as you pointed out earlier, want to stay in town once they're educated.
Yep.
Peter Scarcello, Regional Vice President for Hunt Real Estate ERA. Thank you for being with us this morning.
Thank you, Peter.
I'd like to wish everybody a happy new year. This is Peter Hunt. We'll be back again next week at the same time. And remember, when it comes to real estate, all of upstate is Hunt Country.